Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Previously on The Rundown with Alex Dickinson.
Life is a whole lot more interesting when you set out to do something and the answer to the question of whether or not you can is, I don't know. Like if you set a goal for yourself and someone says, oh, are you going to be able to do that? And you say, I don't know, but I'm still going to go for it. Like life gets a whole lot more interesting and fun. So setting those goals for myself in running has just given me like a more fulfilled, I think meaningful ending life. And I'm so grateful for that.
On this episode of The Rundown, I caught up with Toronto Marathon runner and member of Reed Coolset's Coolset Go Run Club, Nick Rupert. Nick ran track as a teenager, but ended up having a negative association to the sport and decided to give it up for over 5 years. He returned to running to improve his mental and physical health with the goal of one day racing the Boston Marathon. This year, that dream became a reality, towing the line and completing his first in what was an emotional and heartfelt finish down Boylston Street. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by the annual Wings for Life World Run taking place on Sunday, May 8th. Run and walk for those who can't. The format is simple. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com to sign up to race. Download the app on your mobile device, and on May 8th, when the race begins, run as far as you can until the virtual catcher car passes you by. 100% of the race fee is donated to spinal cord research. By registering, you're making a donation to support and help find a cure for millions around the world affected by spinal cord injuries. I've been a part of this race for the past 4 years, and it's by far one of the most unique formats. Here's how it works for listeners in Canada. On Sunday, May 8th at 7 a.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. Pacific, the race begins. You set your own course and distance, and then you go. 30 minutes after the start of the race, a virtual finish line starts on course, slowly picking up pace to try and catch you. The further and faster you run, the longer it takes to catch up to you. Whether you plan to run 5K, 42, or even pushing a stroller, you'll be competing against your friends and other runners across the world for a great cause. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com or download the Wings for Life World Run app in the App Store or Google Play. Then sign up and register for Team Ben Squad. Set your target distance and be sure to turn on your GPS to track your race. When the finish line catches you, your race is over and it's time for brunch and to cheer on your friends. So grab a friend to race with you, plug the date in your calendar, and set your alarm. Good luck with your training and see you on May 8th. In this week's news, some of Canada's top elite athletes perform extremely well at the most recent world major. Fresh off the Tokyo Olympics, Melindy Elmore, Tasha Wodak, and Trevor Hofbauer towed the line at the 126th Boston Marathon. Melindy finished as top Canadian female in the race, with a time of 2 hours, 27 minutes, and 58 seconds, landing her 11th place, and Tasha was right behind her, crossing the line in 19th. On the men's side, Trevor finished in 15th, crossing the line with a time of 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 52 seconds. Both Trevor and Melindy's times were the fastest ever for Canadians at the Boston Marathon. It was just so incredible to see our country's athletes perform so well amongst the world's best, and at one of the most prestigious races. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this article, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. As I get older, it seems like, you know, I continuously, you know, making new friends, but a lot of them are within the sport of running, which obviously I have a huge passion for. My high school buddies are still in my life. They just don't understand the whole running thing, and keep adding to that friendship list. And my next guest is one of those people. Actually met him at the New York City Marathon. At the end of it, we didn't run 1 minute together, but managed to have a nice conversation on the walk out of the course. So he's recently ran the Boston Marathon. We share that in common, and it was his first, and I can't wait to dive into that with him and his journey to get there. He's a great guy, and welcome to the show, Nick Rupert.
Thanks so much for having me, Justin. I've been a longtime fan since we met there in New York City, and I'm happy to be finally on the podcast.
Yeah, that's actually like a funny story. Like when I tell people, like if you ever come up in conversation, you know, like a, you know, my buddy from Toronto, like we met that time, like walking outside of the New York Marathon and shared a few pretzels post race and picked up our gear and stuff like that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, for anybody who has run the New York City Marathon or who hasn't, it's a very long walk after the race is done, and I was really hurting, and you were so nice to offer me some extra pretzels that you had, and I mean it's all history from there. We've had a great couple years of connections and chats and friendships, so and obviously some great podcasts to listen to too.
Yeah, no, I'm stoked, and I can't wait to share your story too, which is going to be fun. So you just got back from Boston, the dream that many runners have and would love to be there. You want to dive into that a little bit and share just, you know, what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, I've always dreamed of running the Boston Marathon since I was a teenager, really running track. And I really got back into running. I took a break and I got back into it about 5 years ago. And the main goal was to break 3 hours and to run the Boston Marathon. And I thought it would happen a little bit sooner than it did. It took me 5 years to get there. But it was worth the wait. It was just such an amazing weekend. Everything from the organization that the BAA put on and the expo to the atmosphere in Boston on race weekend, and getting to see a lot of people that you haven't seen in a long time, seeing runners from all around the North America and really the world come together for a race. And then just the entire experience from waking up, getting on the bus up to Hopkinton, and then the race itself. It was everything that really I dreamed of. It was an amazing experience. It really truly lived up to the hype, and it was a perfect day. It was really a perfect day for a marathon. Sunny, just the perfect temperature. And yeah, what a historic course. I have to say that everybody was right. It definitely did beat me up. The first half was great. The second half was definitely a rough experience for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like, you know, it's so well known. There's so much information about the course. Once you know that you're going to be running it, you know, if I remember like seeking some advice, and you know, you don't know until you actually run it yourself, you know? So was there anything that you picked up on that you were like, wow, that's like so true? And was there anything that you were like maybe surprised by the course? Cause like, you know, I try to give you advice too, but at a certain point you're just getting it from everywhere, and like, you just got to see the beast for itself, you know?
Yeah. And I think that one of the best pieces of advice is something that you said on the podcast is let the race come to you. And I felt like I truly did that. I also did a lot of hill training, a lot of work on, you know, long runs with hills in the second half and later on at marathon effort. And really nothing prepared me for the Newton Hills. I have to say that, I don't think it was just the difficulty of the course. I unfortunately got COVID 3.5 weeks before the race happened, and I had some pretty bad symptoms. I also get asthma when I do get sick, and so I had some difficulties with my lungs leading up to the race. And I thought that I'd be fine, but you know, really adding that part on top of the race was very difficult. I could feel my lungs start to, you know, constrict by almost 10K, and by 20, I was having a hard time catching my breath. And when you're not even at the Newton Hills and you're having a hard time getting a full breath, I think that's probably a bad sign. I probably should have really just, pulled off the pace a little bit, but I'm the type of person that, you know, I wouldn't enjoy myself the same if I didn't go full send and completely give it my all out there. So I kept trying to push the pace a little bit more and keep my pace up through Wellesley. And I thought that the downhill heading into the Newton Hills might, you know, spark something back in my legs. But once I hit that first hill, I knew that I was in big trouble for the rest of the race. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's like rolling hills the first half, right? Which,
yeah.
And, you know, people try to take advantage of that, but it can be, you know, it's a calculated risk that you need to take to be able to tackle those Newton Hills later on.
Yeah. And I think that, I did a lot of my research. I think that a lot of people don't realize that, you know, even though it's a net downhill, even though there is a lot of downhill in the first half, there is a lot of rolling hills. They start early and they're very often. I felt that they didn't really faze me. There is one in Wellesley as well that was a pretty steep incline, but your legs truly do get beaten up. And I'm not sure, you know, other than going out there to the actual course itself, if there's anything that really can train you for what that experience is like on race day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, but I mean, I think the thing that impressed me the most was all the people, like the fans and stuff that just lined the course the whole way from, you know, it doesn't matter where you are really.
Yeah.
You always got people like cheering and supporting you. And the finish is like unlike any other finish you can ever experience, right?
For sure. And I was there last October cheering on my partner who was running the race. She also ran with me here this spring. But it wasn't exactly the same last October. There wasn't the same kind of crowd support. So I wasn't sure exactly what to expect, but I was totally blown away. Like, even in the start corrals, as you're, you know, walking towards the start line, there's little parties going on and people outside of their homes cheering you on. And then the entire way from, I couldn't believe the amount of crowd support and the roars of the crowds. And, I heard the rumors that you could hear the women of Wellesley College cheering well before you got there. And I certainly heard them, and I decided to soak it all in. I was blowing a lot of kisses, and I was, you know, giving a lot of high fives. That was probably the last cheery moment of my experience until I hit Boylston. But through Heartbreak and Newton Hills, the crowd was amazing. And I had as I mentioned, I had a very hard time breathing. I was, you know, doing everything I could to keep moving forward, to not stop, to just move my legs and just move forward and hang on to the person ahead of me. And if it wasn't for the crowd support, I don't know if I would have been able to get to the finish line. If it was a little bit more of a quieter, smaller marathon, I don't think I would have been able to finish it. But once I got to Hereford and then Boylston, I just tried to look around as much as I possibly could and soak in the entire experience. And it was like nothing I've ever experienced before. As you mentioned, we both ran in New York City, and the crowd support there is truly tremendous as well. But, you know, there's something special about Boston, and everybody talks about it, but until you really experience it, it's not something you can really define.
For sure. I found it was more, a bit more spread out in New York, you know. It was cool because like all the different boroughs and all that. But yeah, it's definitely got a different like aura to it. Boston's prestigious for a reason, and congrats on running it.
Thank you.
And such a great result too. Like I love that you didn't give up, and I was like, I had all my buddies on the trackers, elites and just everybody who was running it. I was like having everybody on there and checking their times and stuff like that, and you stayed pretty consistent throughout despite the challenges that you were facing. You know, I want to talk about that a little bit because, you know, so many times, you know, you ran that race the way you wanted to, you know, and the how you dealt with all these things, all these factors, there's also a lot of reflection that goes into that, both before and during the race too. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about, you know, when you're facing adversity. I mean, the marathon's hard enough, you know, you're, and, you know, as like athletes, you know, we and runners, we don't want to make, we don't like to make excuses for our performance and all this, you know. But you know, you face some real challenging things, you know, like COVID just a few weeks before, the asthma also. It would have been easy for you to pack it in, you know. So what is it in your maybe your mentality or in your training that allowed you to continue and push forward? And you know it's hard to draw the strength sometimes, you know, and like you said, like there was good crowd support and keeps you engaged, which is great. But I find it fascinating, like, you know, how did I get through that moment? You know, when you look back, you're like, what was it that like, why did I stick it out? And like, it was hard, and I could have just packed it in and said it was, you know, it was illness or COVID or this, that, or the other thing, but I didn't, you know. And then I like to know maybe what you think about that.
Yeah, for sure. I really think that my mental strength is something that is a strength of mine. I don't think I'm the most talented runner. I don't think I have the, you know, perfect marathon body or anything like that. But one thing that I do rely on is my mental strength. And you know, the marathon and running is a different journey for each person. And for me, it's about pushing through adversity. It's about being better than you were yesterday. It's about striving to be a better person and a better runner. And for me, you know, having an amazing marathon experience was about giving it everything I possibly had. And I didn't want to make any excuses. You know, the week leading up to the race, I was in a little bit of denial that, you know, COVID had the effects on me that it really did. And I don't want to use that as an excuse, but, you know, it did really make it a lot harder. But I still had a really great time. I ran a 2:49.27, which, you know, is my official personal best, you know, better than my New York City time of 2:54. But unfortunately, it was below my marathon time trial time. I did a couple of years ago of a 2:46, and my goal was more in a, you know, sub 2:45 side of things. But, you know, all those numbers aside, really my main goal was to just give it everything I had and fight through right to the finish. And really what powered me through that second half was, you know, unfortunately I lost my father just over a year ago. He died of a lung disease. He'd been, you know, in pretty poor health for most of my life and battling through many different diseases and illnesses that, you know, made it really hard for him to breathe. At the end of his life, he was on oxygen, forced oxygen and a lot of other things that kept him going. And for so long in his life, he had a hard time breathing. He had a hard time, you know, walking and just getting through the everyday, you know, things that you take for granted in life. And he pushed through all of that. He tried to, you know, keep a smile on his face and fight right through to the end. And so, the entire time I was thinking about him, thinking about, the strength that he showed and not ever giving up and fighting right to the finish. And that's exactly what I did. I tried to fight on and think about him and use that strength to push me to the finish line. And as I went down Boylston, I thought of how proud I was of myself and hoped that he was proud of me. And I threw a little props up to him as I crossed the finish line. So it was a really special moment for me. And, you know, in 2020, he was not in great health, and I was supposed to run the race, but it didn't happen because of COVID. He said that he'd be there, you know, no matter how bad he felt. He said he'd be there at the race, but unfortunately, the race didn't happen, and he's not here with us anymore. But I really truly felt him with me throughout that race, and he really helped me, push to the finish, and. And the race also helped me connect with him, connect with, you know, something that, you know, he was the guy that drove me to track practices back and when I was younger. He was one that would bring me to all the sporting events. And, you know, I'd always look out and see him in the crowd. And as I was going down Boylston, I was seeing the amazing crowd support, but I also, you know, kind of felt him there with me, just like he was throughout my former races as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you finished the job, you know, like the... And I saw the photos, like real nice photos of you coming down the finish and pointed to this guy and a nice tribute to your dad. And, you know, no doubt he was like looking out for you that day. And, you know, that's sometimes the inspiration that we need. And, I'm sure he was like looking over you for sure. What a hell of a race. And I mean, at one point, like for some of the race, you were on pace to crush that goal time. And, you know, anything can happen in Boston, but no doubt that's in those legs of yours. And, you know, there will be another race day and we move on and pursue that, you know? So that's also an encouraging, part of it too, of the result. You know, sometimes we don't get that number that we strive for, at the start, but doesn't mean it can't be had in another moment. You know, it's
for sure
part of this.
I was definitely feeling great in the first half of the race. And I feel like this is what most people say in Boston, is they're feeling great in the first half and they were pushed the pace. And then it all changes very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, if I didn't go out there and push for that pace and that time, then I wouldn't have been happy with my result at the end, because I didn't give it my all. And that's just how the marathon goes some days. And, you know, the last time I faced adversity like that was in 2018 at the Chicago Marathon. And, you know, it's very different, but still, I think that, you know, as runners, we can all take, you know, so much from races that don't go exactly the way we plan. You know, I think that adversity can either break you down or it can build you up. And I like to think about the latter and really let it build me up and use that as motivation to get out there and get better and take on the next challenge.
For sure. You mentioned like your dad, you know, taking you to sporting events and to track and supporting you in your athletics and, I'm sure many other aspects of your life. Can we go back and, you know, try and figure out, you know, how Nick got to this point, and, you know, were you athletic as a kid? Were you, you know, encouraged to play sports? And, you know, when did running really come in?
For sure. You know, it's a long journey all the way to Boston, but I started, you know, I loved sports as a kid, and I tried everything, played hockey, soccer, a bunch of different sports, but I was pretty mediocre at everything. But I did a couple of Terry Fox runs and I was just like, oh, I really love this. So this is fun. I'm pretty good at it. And I grew up in Ottawa, but I eventually moved to the Belleville area. I started to really excel at track and field, especially in the 800 meter, 1500 meter. I wasn't anything exceptional, but I did make it off the 1 year, and you know, I was having some success. I played other sports, hockey, rugby, soccer. I did some swimming as well, but really my main love was track and field and the 800 meters. You know, even by the end of high school, that kind of started to slip, where I was focusing a little bit more on, you know, social life and drinks with friends rather than on my running. And I was, you know, had a lot of injuries, but I still had goals. I had big goals of, you know, competing in university at the CIS level. And I went to the University of Windsor as a walk-on to the track team there. And honestly, I never really competed much with the team. I was mostly just training with the team. I was definitely at the bottom of the lineup of fitness and of skill. We had some amazing runners on that team, coached by Dennis Farrell. You know, some that would include at that time Melissa Bishop, Dana Pitereski. So some big names that have you know, made a big splash. Noelle Malcolm as well, 400 meter hurdler, and Brittany Moran, who's now an elite marathon runner. So we had a lot of great athletes, and unfortunately for me at that time, it was so much work, and just I was drained mentally, physically. Then I decided that I was, I couldn't do it anymore after the first year. And so within the first week of my second year at university, I quit running. And I don't know, it was a very long time before I was able to lace up a pair of shoes again. And I really lost my love of running at that time. I was too competitive. I was really externally motivated by, you know, how I was competing against other people, and not really, you know, about how, you know, it made me feel, and my actual love for running. So I probably took about 5 years or more off of running. And then one day I was really, you know, on it. Honestly, I was into the party scene a little bit too much. You know, I excelled in my schoolwork, but outside of that, I was drinking way too much, you know, into the consuming drugs as well. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day and I didn't like what I saw. Like, I didn't like what I saw physically, but also how I felt mentally. I'd really suffered a lot from anxiety and depression, and I needed to find a way to get myself back to who I felt I was. And I decided I was going to start running again. Some days it was just, you know, a mixture of running and walking, and other days I had a good run and I went a little bit longer, but it was just slowly over time getting back into running. So eventually my friend, Andrew Iguano, he was the University of Windsor runner and now owner of the Runner's Choice in Kitchener-Waterloo area. And he was able to motivate me. He's like, you can get back into this. Like, let's go race. Let's do a half marathon. And we did a smaller half marathon, the Trot to the Beach in Erie, Ontario. And I trained for that and I ran a 1:27, my first half marathon. And I felt so great. It was so invigorating. It just totally reignited my love for the sport. And, you know, at that time I started to find, you know, I love the sport. I love just getting better than yesterday. It's not about me comparing to other people. It's me comparing to how I was, in the past and continuing to try to get better. So yeah, there's a few years of kind of a balance where I would, you know, train for a half marathon. And then, you know, after the half marathon was over, I'd get back into drinking and, you know, smoking. Honestly, I was smoking cigarettes and cannabis and doing everything I possibly could to abuse my body when I wasn't training. And it was just a horrible mix, really, where I wasn't really giving my full self. And so once again, I was really struggling with my mental health. And I decided that, you know, I was going to get over that by going on this journey and trying to run a marathon. And not just trying to run a marathon, but my goal was run a marathon, eventually break 3 hours, and then qualify for the Boston Marathon. And that was January of 2017. I was in a pretty dark space and I needed some goal that was going to break me out of that. And that's what really led me on this journey to the Boston Marathon finish line. So it was about a 5.5 year journey that brought me there.
Cool. Yeah, that's a lot to unpack there, Nick. So I have to rewind a little bit. But like the training you were doing in school that made you quit. Like, was it just like too much? Like too much training? Too much practice? Too much competition, or what was the?
I think I just had a hard time really balancing, you know, schoolwork, going to university, as well as, you know, the social life there, nutrition, and I was plagued by injury as well. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like a lot of work to be, you know, when I was comparing myself to some of the best runners in the country. And when you're so externally motivated by, you know, how you rank against other people, it can be really a bit discouraging to go out and work so hard and to not be able to compare to them. And that's why, you know, when I see new runners or other runners and they're talking about, you know, how they compare to elites or how they compare to myself or others, like, it's not what it's about. It's really about comparing yourself to you. And so, and finding that internal motivation to get yourself out the door every day and to compete. So, I think I just had a hard time with, that entire balance, the external and internal motivation. And I just kind of lost the, you know, pure reasons of why I love to run.
Yeah. Isn't that a toxic, way to look at it, right? Like, and mm-hmm. I think for as great as the sport is and in getting people in shape, like, it's amazing how many people are picking up running, especially during the pandemic. So from a physical point of view, I think it's really great. I think people are getting in shape. They're getting healthy. They're working on their cardio, all that. But then, you know, I like social media. You know, we promote the podcast on social media. We make friends. We stay connected like we have on social media. But, you know, people also open up about all kinds of stuff. And unfortunately, some of this stuff is pretty toxic. You know, It could be their workouts. It could be how disappointed they are, you know, or their expectations of themselves on a given race, you know. From a mental perspective, it doesn't all seem that healthy, you know. And I try and always keep the lighter side of training. And yeah, I mean, I work hard and I try my best, but I'm also realistic with myself and my goals and where I'm at. And I think that's really important too, you know. It's interesting that you found that balance after, you know, that you learned that, you know.
Yeah, and I really think it's about, you know, lifting other runners up when, you know, mm-hmm. talking about a toxic environment. Like, it wasn't just myself that was, you know, beating myself up. You know, on the track team, there's a lot of, you know, discussion of, you know, who's the best and who's better and who's doing better in training. And, you know, I'd love to see now that more in the, and at least in the running community that I'm part of, where it doesn't really matter. Like, I don't care what another runner is running in terms of time. I'm happy to support them, you know, to try to be better and to enjoy, you know, the experience of running. And I don't really care, like, if the time on the clock for them. I find so much inspiration in other runners, no matter their ability level or, you know, their relationship with the sport. Like, it's, I think it's really on each and every one of us to continue to lift up those around us and not put each other down. I do love competition. I do love to have a competitive spirit, but I want to see everybody out there, you know, do their best on any given day and to enjoy themselves as much as possible. So I think that really we need to take that in mind when we're, you know, comparing ourselves to others and making sure that we're lifting people up and not putting them down.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's something, you know, it's part of every conversation that we try and put through the podcast or even, you know, one-on-one, if I'm talking to people. Yeah, it's always trying to have that positive spin, like you say, and definitely being part of a team of other runners where you just like go out and do your workouts and it's all for the passion of the sport, you know. It's all for the love of the sport, and it's not to put each other down. It's how we get better. It's how we improve. We have to practice, you know. This, we're not just, we can run, yes, but like we have to practice running to be good at running, you know. You're not just good at it. you know, I think we've lost that a little bit in the language, you know. It's, you know, the, you know, when you talk about like basketball players, like Michael Jordan and, you know, Kobe Bryant, let's say, you know, these guys hit thousands and thousands and thousands of shots in practice before they can hit the game winners, you know. Like, these guys miss so many more shots than they, you know, they miss tons of shots, way more than they make, you know. But it's all about practice and not beating yourself up for practice. That's why it's there. So you can perform when it counts, right? So
for sure. And sometimes, you know, success is motivating, but sometimes failure is even more motivating.
Oh, yeah.
I think back in, you know, as I mentioned, I had my fourth marathon in Chicago. I had a really rough experience, and I was mostly self-coached at the time. And I didn't really execute a great race, and I was really beating myself up for a few days, but I decided, you know, I was going to turn that around. And that was a time where I invested in getting a coach, and I found I had a great opportunity with Reed Coolset to start working with him. And, you know, that's really flourished over the last 2 years, where it's gone from a couple of us working with him as athletes to now our entire team is Coolset Go, and seeing the breadth of different runners that we have on our team. It's really amazing. And I'm so happy that, you know, through that, I'm putting up air quotes right now, failure, like, you know, it came to have this such success and such an amazing opportunity. And, you know, maybe if I had a great race in Chicago, I wouldn't have had this opportunity, with Reed, and, I wouldn't have gone down this path, but, I did. And I don't regret anything. It's really, helped me out.
Well, and I want to talk more about Reed, but when you came back to running, you know, you left it with a kind of a, you know, with a negative feeling, you know, and then you came back to it. Do you remember, was there something like other than, you know, the partying and what you saw in the mirror, like, was there anything that triggered it? Like, was there any, you know, was there a moment that you can say like, oh, that was a turning point? Was it like a horrible feeling in the next morning? Was it, you know, was there one defining thing that kind of switched you onto a path of health?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's many days where, I got the motivation to get back into it. Honestly, it started as a little bit of in a negative way too. Like, I thought about the other track athletes that continued to run throughout university and the way that they spoke to me, the way that how I felt they looked at me. I think a lot of that might've just been in my head, but, I wanted to prove to them at the time that, you know, I could do it and I could still, you know, get back into running. And, eventually though, there was, you know, there was a lot of days where I didn't feel great about myself. I was very depressed and, I was able to use running to manage that, to manage some of the anxiety I had, to manage some of the, you know, depression I had. And it just made me feel good. I stopped caring about what other people thought about, you know, how those, the people on my team might've thought. And I really just cared about how it made me feel. And honestly, running, you know, sometimes it hurts, but most of the time mentally, it just makes me feel better. I get out the door and I come back and I feel refreshed. I feel like, you know, I feel like I've improved myself as a person. So, it was really, you know, at first it was a little bit of a toxic, reason to get back into it, to show to myself and to others that I could still do this and that, you know, and get into a little bit better shape. But eventually it was, you know, reconnecting with the love that I had for the sport. And, you know, I think that through COVID and the pandemic, I had to refine that again. It was really tough when, you know, the Boston Marathon got canceled. I was 6 weeks out and it was, you know, there was no races on the schedule. And, a lot of times those races motivate you to keep moving forward, but we all have to remember like why we're doing this. And at the end of the day, I love the sport. I love the act of running. Some days it's a moving meditation for me where I'm able to connect with myself and escape from the rest of the world and explore some pretty cool places. I think that, you know, most people that live in every one of the cities that runners run through, they're not able to really connect to their environment and their city like we do as runners. And just being able to escape from it all and to explore a city on foot is such an amazing, liberating experience. So, it honestly, reconnecting with running was, you know, a little bit of a, you know, it started as a negative thing where I was trying to once again prove to others something. But, you know, once I got back into it, I realized it's more about proving it to yourself and really about connecting internally versus trying to prove something to someone externally instead.
For sure. And so what did running look like for you then? Like, was it, you know, two times a week? Was it, because it sounds like it was just like get out the door and you weren't training for anything in particular. And you're training for shorter distances than you do now when you were in school. So what was your, like, I know you said sometimes it was like a run walk, but was it like you were trying to get out, you know, on the weekends or like what did it look like for you? And then, you know, what, you know, other than the positive impact it had on you, like for your anxiety and your mental state, like, did you notice changes physically in yourself? And like, how did that all look?
Yeah, well, it was motivating to see the physical changes at first in my body, but I was getting out there a few times a week and it was, you know, sometimes it was a mixture of walking and running and sometimes it was like, you know, get to this certain point and then I can, you know, take a break and then run, see if I can run back. And, you know, the next day it was, can I get farther than that certain point? So it started really small and then, you know, I did have a lot of experience in running and learned from that and saw what other people were doing around me and did some reading and brought on some programs and used that to build for a few half marathons. But as I mentioned, for the first few years, it was I would get into a great build of training. And then after the race, I would, you know, kind of go right back to my old ways. And so I did that probably for 3 years between 2014 to 2017, where I was running half marathons, and smaller races, but, you know, I wasn't completely committed to the sport and to bettering my own health mentally and physically. And then finally it was, you know, I hit rock bottom in about 2016. I'd once again kind of fallen into substance abuse and having issues with my mental health. And I'd lost my job, which, you know, I think was a bit of a reason because of that. You know, I wasn't putting myself forward and doing my best work at my job either. And, you know, I'd moved to Toronto and I didn't have a job. I had all these issues and I wanted to find something positive in my life, and running became that thing. And it started with, you know, going out to groups here in Toronto, like the Parkdale Roadrunners, and, you know, working through that social anxiety of, you know, saying hello to people and going out and running with others. And then, you know, joining the Nike Run Club here in Toronto and doing some runs with them. And eventually it just, you know, it started to build back that confidence and going out on those group runs and then getting in some runs by myself. It was motivating to see not just my progress, but then other people progressing around me too.
Was it hard to break out of the substance abuse? Like, I've never, I always say I've always been like addicted to good things. You know, I never, you know, struggled with that. And I know, but I know it's a real thing. And I know, you know, people do struggle with it once they get into it, you know, or they get into it when they're in school and then they continue, you know, or, but how hard was it to break that habit? And was it like, is it like once you start, you know, once you get into the healthy lifestyle, which running can bring, is it like a moment where you're like, oh, it's not really worth it anymore? Or like, or is it literally like, I don't want to feel like shit tomorrow morning because I got to run, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not perfect now either. And it's an ongoing journey. It's never, at least for me, it's not just like, oh, I've conquered that, it's over. It's always something that, you know, is with me and something that I have to manage and that I have to make sure that I'm, you know, keeping at bay. And I've just become better and better with that over time. And yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, I don't want to feel like that tomorrow morning because I have to go out for a run. And other days it's, you know, I realize how good running feels and how good it feels to, you know, be sober and have a clear mind and not have to worry about, you know, making a fool of myself when I'm, you know, on drinking or on a substance or something. And so I just like who I am as a runner when I'm really committed to running and not, you know, trying to use substances to, you know, mask some of the pains that I've been through. Instead, I'd rather, you know, face them head on and do that through exercise sometimes and working through those problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's a much healthier way to go about it, but you know, it's something you have to learn too, right? Like through experience, and like, that's a more, maybe a more positive way instead of inflicting, you know, because in reality, like you're inflicting pain on you through substance, you know, to forget certain things or to mask certain feelings that you might be having. So I like that you said that, you know, running can be that, and it's more like more of a positive way to feel. You can also feel pain with running through trainings and stuff like that, but it's a nice way to deal with an alternative way to deal with those things too. So
yeah, sometimes that pain is a little bit better than the pain that I'd feel the morning after and how I'd feel mentally and physically there. So I'd much rather feel the pain of a marathon than the pain of waking up like that.
What are some like valuable lessons that you learn, or looking back, you can say like you learned early on, or maybe some common mistakes that begin, you know, runners make at the beginning?
I mean, you know, definitely trying to do too much too soon. When I was first, you know, with my track background, I thought that I could just, you know, hop in and excel. And I also thought that I could take on more mileage and more workouts than I could. And that really showed in my first marathon. I thought I'd be, you know, close to a low 3-hour marathon, but I was around a 3:32, and I had many, many issues on course that day. So trying to take on too much too fast was definitely too much as a beginner runner. And I try to just make sure that, as I've mentioned a lot during this conversation, it's just like, don't compare yourself to others. Like, this is, it's your own journey. No matter where you start or where you are at this moment, it's about, finding, how you can, connect with yourself and be better than yesterday and not compare yourself to where others are at.
Mm-hmm. And you feel like, like you mentioned, like entering the run community too, like, did that change the running for you, rather than going out on your own? Like, did that create, did you find that a positive experience? You mentioned like it helped you kind of get through some social anxiety and stuff like that too. So I can imagine that it helped you with that too.
For sure. I love the run community and all the people I've met, like yourself, through it. I've met great groups of people, really inspiring people for so many different reasons. But, honestly, I'm a bit of a lone wolf when it comes to running, and sometimes I think that's okay. Like, I know that there are groups to really make you faster, and you can get inspiration from other people. But I really do like to disconnect and do my own thing sometimes, whether that's a long solo run or putting in a workout by myself and knowing that I only can count on myself and I only have myself to push me. I find I'm really at peace with that some days. But the running community and those groups that really helped me get out of my shell and learn a lot too. Like, I learned so much from other people and other runners, just through conversation as well as seeing what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. It's really inspiring. And I mentioned a couple of groups. There's so many, around not just Toronto, but Canada and North America where, it's really inspiring what they're doing, not just in terms of performance, but what they're doing to contribute to the community. And that's something I'd like to grow in the future is my community involvement and, how I can contribute back to the running community. But at the same time, I really think that, it's to each their own. And if you're just out there running for yourself, that's okay too. It's okay to be a little bit selfish and to do this for you. And a lot of the days I do get out there and I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it to feel good and to be competitive with myself. And it doesn't have to be always about, the group. It sometimes I'm okay with it being a little bit selfish, at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. It's good to get out there on your own and just like be in your own, in your own head too. Right. Like, I agree with you. Like I do like the social run or, you get a buddy and go do your long together, but it's nice to just be out there on your own and, do you listen to music when you run solo or are you just like,
well, it's usually the Live Rundown podcast. I'm a big podcast.
Little plug there.
So, most of my easy runs, I do have a podcast that I'm listening to. I also love some electronic music for more of my workouts. But other days, as I mentioned, it's more of a moving meditation where I don't put in headphones and I just listen to my breathing and my surroundings, especially if I'm able to get out on a trail. Sometimes those are the best ways to connect with yourself. Sometimes I do listen to some music, for long runs and workouts, but, otherwise I'm a big time podcast lover, especially on this one here. So, that's what I do listen to on my runs.
I appreciate it. And I didn't pay you to say that. So I
no.
Before Reed, did you get coached by anybody else or is that your first coaching experience?
Well, when I got back into it, definitely there was a lot of friends that helped out when I ran with the Nike Run Club. Brittany Moran was a big help there where, she really provided a lot of her knowledge and experience, and she helped me out a lot in my early days. I took on a lot of my own kind of self-coaching, but she definitely helped me out. She now is a coach of Stridewise running here in Toronto. Eventually, it was before she'd started that, I saw this opportunity with Reed and so through a friend. So I asked if it was a possibility that he might be able to coach me. And I'm very happy that he was able, he accepted that and took me on as an athlete.
Mm-hmm. And like, it's a big move, right? Like, he's a Olympian and we've had him on the show as well. And amazing runner in his own right. It's a big move to make. Yeah. And I don't know, at some point, I think when you've just been doing it long enough, you're like ready to make the investment, I think, in a coach. But it's also easy to say, you know, to just follow a plan online and for free and not pay. Where do you see the value in getting a coach, and how did that change things for you?
Yeah, I think it all depends on where you're at in your journey and what running means to you and where you want to go with it. But at that time, I really wanted to, you know, push through to the next level. And, you know, as I mentioned, I still am a little bit competitive and like to be competitive with myself and my times and to get better every day. And I saw myself progressing, but I plateaued a little bit. And so I was ready for something new. And Reed just brought in an exceptional amount of wisdom and experience to my running. And I've had a pretty well string of personal bests for the last few years working under him. So I think it's really, you know, if you're seeing a plateau, sometimes you just need a change of pace and something new sparked into your running and into your training if you're looking to improve your performance. But it all depends on, you know, your relationship with running and what you're looking to get out of it. There's a lot of really, really great coaches out there, Reed being one of them. And if, you know, sometimes it's appropriate to take that and approach, and sometimes it's totally fine to find a online program too.
Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of questions about this. Cause like, I'll ask Reed the question, I'll say to him something like, you know, how do you relate to your athletes when you're at such a level, you know? So how do you feel like you can not be intimidated and just be part, like be coached by him when you know that he's, you know, been to the Olympics and runs super fast, even still to this day, you know, and now is winning like ultra marathons and stuff.
Honestly, I was definitely intimidated to start with working with Reed. He comes with such a rich history in racing and as well as his involvement in the community. So yeah, I was definitely intimidated to start, but you know, he's a regular guy. He's a great guy. And so, being able to, you know, chat with him and have him understand what I need as a runner and who I am as a person and making sure that, you know, we build a friendship as well, as a coaching relationship was huge for me. So, yeah, I was definitely a little bit nervous at the start, and sometimes I'm like, oh geez, you know, I'm not going to compare to anything that he's ever achieved, but you know, he's always willing to adapt and to listen and to answer any questions when I reach out. And, you know, he's even sometimes jumped out in some of our time trials and helped pace me to a couple of personal bests. So, you know, I don't think it's, you know, no matter where you are in running, I don't think you need to be intimidated by some of the amazing coaches that are out there. And I think like a good coach will be able to relate to you as an athlete and where you are and be able to adapt your training program to that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know that, like, was it a big deal for you, like a big selection process? Like, I know for me, when I was looking to get a coach, it was important. Like, I know there's a lot of, there's not only online programs you can get for free, but there's also online coaches. So the thing now with I think that COVID's brought out a lot is that, you know, you can get remote coaching from just about anyone, anywhere in the world. But I know in my own selection process, I thought it was going to be important for me to have not only other athletes to train with that were under the same coach, but also a coach that was present and close by that I could see and have a, you know, not, it's not just a Zoom call, you know? I don't know what that selection process looked for you, if it was super rigorous or not, but you know, what do you think makes for a good coach for you?
Yeah. And at the time I was definitely, you know, think about a few different options. But there was, you know, a few runners, Gabriel Jarquin's one of them, who I still run with. He trains on my team, that, you know, we're looking for new coaches at the same time. And we put together a little group of us that we don't always train together, but, you know, we'll float ideas past each other. And that was important to me. Reed is, you know, he's in Hamilton. So it's a little bit, it's not exactly like he's, you know, out at most of my runs, but it's really just finding someone you connect with and someone you feel comfortable with. And that's what I found in Reed, and just the amount of experience he has and knowledge in the sport. Like, every time I talk to him, he's dropping knowledge bombs every time. Mm-hmm. He has so much wisdom. So just being able to soak some of that in was really important to me. But I think it's a relationship, honestly. I think that Gabriel actually said that to me a few times through the years, where, you know, it's really a relationship and finding, you know, what works for you and what works for the coach and trying to find that person that you can make that connection with. So it's really just important to find that connection with your coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody who understands you and you understand what, you know, what they expect and stuff like that. And yeah, Reed's a great guy. So that's, I'm sure he's easy to get along with too. What would you say, like, without giving away all his secrets, like, what would you say was the biggest, like, turning point for you in your running? And maybe it's not even with Reed. I'm not sure when you noticed the biggest shift, because now you're obviously like a sub-3 marathoner. But you have ran a 3:30 in the past too. So where do you feel like the biggest improvements came?
You know, there's probably quite a few things I can name off that Reed's brought to the table for me in terms of training, but some of it's just consistency over time and just continuing to persist and show up. You know, like, some of us, you know, will have a bad race or two or three and you get down on yourself, but it's like persevering and continuing to be consistent and work through those tough times. And I think that, you know, that's not something that you can get from every coach. It's something that you have to kind of pull from inside you, is to continue to be consistent and to show up every day, even when, you're having a bad day. And I'm not sure who I heard this from. It's probably one of your podcasts or another, but like, not getting too high on the good days and not getting too low on the bad days and just showing up no matter what, and trying to stay level headed has been huge for me. So, I think it's truly about consistency, and, you know, Reed's definitely added in a lot of different, you know, workouts and, training schedules that have truly helped me perform better. But I think it's just about continuing to show up every day, no matter the circumstance.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. And I think that's really important. And yeah, something, you know, I was just having a conversation yesterday about that. Like, it's just about consistency. It's like, even if you know you're too tired to do a workout, go out and do it anyways. Like,
yeah. Or do a portion of it and, or just get out for a run and still, you know, still do something where, you know, as long as you're, you know, keeping your health in mind and your and then any injuries, like, if you just show up and give it your best, like, that's enough to keep moving forward.
Yeah, the important thing is getting out the door, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm a bit like you with like all these like nuggets of knowledge that I have in my head. It's like it's like a mashup of all the people I've spoken to. So
yeah,
if you've been listening to the podcast, you've probably picked up on a few of those too, like, And let the race come to you. That's like something my coach said to me, just before CIM. And, you know, it was just like a methodical way to go about a marathon. And, that, you know, probably the best race I've ever ran, not necessarily like tied close to my best time, which was great, but, just the most solid performance for myself personally. And it was just like, it was amazing what that mindset did for me, you know, like the ability was there, but then having that in my head to just be patient and just like, you have time in a marathon, especially in the marathon to make things happen. Just like, things can crumble too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they can go bad just as quick as they can go good, you know, I think.
For sure. Yeah, and it's just crazy how much knowledge there is in the running community, and I find it in so many different ways. And you know, one thing was, you know, what I hear from your podcast and that mindset, which really helped me even in New York City as well, which I ran the New York City half and I had a great race there. And I wanted to make sure I was leaving a lot in the tank for Boston. And so I was letting the race come to me. But, you know, a lot of it too, like my girlfriend, she started running in 2018. And, you know, she's now a 2-time Boston Marathon runner. And, you know, I've been running all my life, and she teaches me new things every day about, you know, how to be a better runner and, you know, how to get through different things. And, you know, as I go out for some of my runs, she's always saying, you know, calm mind, strong heart, fast legs, and those kind of like little things that just stick with you and are able to allow you to, you know, persevere during runs and to kind of learn how to be better every day. It's amazing where you can get knowledge you know, these tidbits of knowledge from around the running community.
Mm-hmm. Do you find it help? Well, I love that quote, or I'm going to quote that now. You know, what your girlfriend tells you, that's amazing. That's almost something you would get tattooed on you. You know, like
yeah. Either that, it's got some Friday Night Lights vibes as well. But yeah,
I'm not running to the parlor after this. Trust me, but you know what I mean. Yeah. But do you find it helps to have a partner that understands like what you're going through, you know, like with the running and everything?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Like I spend a lot of time running, so it is helpful that she understands all that. Sometimes it's a little bit hectic when we're both trying to get in our runs and our strength workout and our mobility and getting, you know, a good meal and all of that. And especially when we're both leading up to a major marathon in Boston, it can be a little bit hectic. But no, it's really amazing to be able to lean on her when I need her and try to be, you know, also a source of strength and knowledge for her when she needs it. So mm-hmm. we work off of each other in that way. And I've learned a lot from her, and it's, I'm very grateful that he's okay with me and I'm going out for a few hours on Sunday mornings, and for us to take, you know, maybe a little bit easier sometime on weekends so that we can get in those hard efforts. And it's great that she's able to be there for me and be so understanding.
For sure. And so that leads me to my next question. Like, how do you balance everything? How do you balance, you know, what are you doing for work right now? And how do you balance the training and relationship? You have a dog, you know, like all these things are come into play. Like, and I'm always curious to know, you know, we're not getting paid to do this, but yeah, you know, we're still training a lot to be able to achieve our own goals and our own success. So what does that look like?
Yeah, I got two French bulldogs, Bruce Wayne and Beatrice. And I have, you know, I work in digital advertising for Rogers Sports and Media with all of our properties there, and then running, and I have a social life too. So there is so much to balance, and I think it's really important to find that balance as runners. You know, like there's so many times where people get injured and they almost like lose a piece of themselves when they're not able to train and they're not able to get out there and run. So you know, especially as you know, amateur athletes, we really need to make sure we're finding that proper balance and that we're, you know, finding other things that also, you know, we're passionate about, so that we don't, you know, invest so much into running that we, you know, when we do get older and aren't able to run or have an injury, you know, it doesn't completely break us. I think it's really important finding that balance. And, you know, I used to really pride myself on being the type of guy that could go out for a few beers and then wake up in the morning and go for a run and find that balance. But I've tried to adjust that a little bit over the years and really just focus more on my health and my mental health as well. So yeah, it's always a balance, just like everything in life is trying to balance everything out there and find really what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm. And also. How do you, what are some of the other things that you do to support that passion, you know, of running? And is it, you know, are you doing a lot of cross training? Is it, you know, therapy days or anything like that? Is there anything other than the running that you're adding to the formula?
For sure. I mean, I definitely should be doing more cross training and definitely should be doing a little bit more strength work. Sorry, Reed. But also, you know, I find that a lot of, you know, I meditate every day. I've meditated every day of 2022 so far. And I find that's a really good way for me to, you know, manage any stresses and the balances of my life and the stress of work and a really strenuous training program or, you know, the rest of the things that life brings. And it also really helps me stay calm during a hard run or, you know, leading up to a race. You know, I on the way to Hopkinton, I definitely closed my eyes, took a few deep breaths and tried to really center myself and let go of any storylines, let go of all the expectations that I've put on myself and, you know, really trying to stay as calm as possible and be present in the moment. And that's one thing that meditation has definitely helped me with. Also, for sure, like therapy, I'm a big believer of that. And I do that bi-weekly and definitely make sure I'm, you know, going to see massage therapists, chiropractors, physiotherapists. But, you know, it's whatever really works for you. For me, meditation has really helped me center myself and stay calm when things are tough.
Mm. Yeah, so you're now the second guest in a row or in recent memory that, like, I just interviewed Alex Dickerson, and, you know, he's into the yoga and the meditation too. So how did you discover that, and how can somebody get it, you know, incorporate this in their own routine? You know, like I don't do meditation. I know there's benefits to it and it helps you be more mindful, but is there, you know, how did you get into it, and can you make any like suggestions or recommendations on how to maybe incorporate that into our daily lives?
Yeah, I mean, it can be as simple as, you know, just stopping for a second and taking a few deep breaths and connecting with yourself. I wouldn't definitely consider myself a pro in the meditation space, but, you know, I started using Headspace, and, you know, first I started with some of the programs that they put out. And after a while, I didn't really want the additional instructions. I just wanted to be able to find calm, quiet place where I could connect with my breath and, you know, make sure that I'm shutting off all the expectations and thoughts internally and externally, and connect with myself. And I don't just do that by sitting down and meditating. I do that on my runs too, where I'm just connecting with my breath, taking in this scenery around me. So, you know, sometimes I can encourage runners to, you know, not put on music and connect with your breath and with everything that's around you as you go on some of these amazing runs. There's so much to be grateful for and so much to really like take in as you're going on a run. And sometimes I think we get lost in like the times and your heart rate zone and your cadence and, you know, putting on music and trying to get really pumped up. But sometimes it's about calming yourself down and being really present in the moment and taking in what's around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. No, it's really good advice. And it sounds like you do like a lot of work, you know, to be, you know, a more complete athlete, more complete human being too. You know, it's awesome to hear that, you know, that you put these things into practice to kind of make yourself better.
Yeah, I've done a lot in my life to break myself down. And so, you know, I've tried to turn that around and do as much as I possibly can to build myself up. And, you know, it's not a straight line up. It's truly a hero's journey where, you know, sometimes you're progressing in the right way and other times you have to take a couple steps back. But, yeah, I really try to invest in myself and in my health and try to become a better person every day.
Mm-hmm. And what's some of the best advice you've ever gotten?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be, you know, as I mentioned a few times, like not comparing yourself to others and to, you know, not get too down on yourself when things don't go well and when you're having a bad day and not to get too high on the amazing days either and not get too, you know, full of yourself that way. It's really about trying to stay grounded and you know, pushing forward no matter what happens, whether it's, you know, a bad day, a great day, you know, this too shall pass, you know, whether things are going good or bad, there's still so much to be thankful for. So we really got to make sure that we're, you know, try to stay as grounded as possible and pushing through things, no matter if things are going well, or if they're, you know, you're having a tough run or a tough race.
Do you have a favorite like race memory, or even maybe like a funny story that you want to share? I know I have a few that I've shared throughout this podcast.
I mean, it's hard to think past running down Boylston Street at this point. Even though I was having a hard time keeping my legs moving and moving forward, but I ran the Ottawa Marathon back in, I believe it was 2019, and finally being able to execute a race and finally break 3 hours. I was so ecstatic. I just throwing out my arms and going across that finish line, even though it was a very, very hot day. I was very sweaty. It was just such a great feeling to finally have accomplished that. And then now to go to Boston and to finally consider myself a Boston marathoner and to catch that elusive unicorn. I mean, it doesn't have to be Boston. It doesn't have to be 3 hours, but you know, whatever that goal is for you, or, you know, whatever that, achievement is for you, it's really about finding, you know, what makes you have that big smile on your face. And I've been lucky to have a few of those moments throughout my running career.
Yeah. How do you top that now? What are you after?
That's really a great question, Justin. I feel like I've closed the chapter on at least that Boston Marathon achievement, and you know, I definitely want to go faster. I'd love to, you know, see if I can break that. You know, we're all about the even numbers, right? So I'd love to break that 2:40 barrier at some point. You know, I'd love to run the World Majors. There's a lot of things that are on my mind, and I think what's important now is to take some time to rest and recover, and then eventually sit down with Reed and find out what is that next thing that's going to push me to continue to work for it and to try and be better.
So I haven't signed up for anything else this coming year?
I have a deferral from last year. We were supposed to run the Wineglass Marathon, but the border was shut. So it's a smaller marathon in upstate New York. So that's the only thing that's on the calendar so far. And so we'll see if that comes about this fall. But otherwise, yeah, it's back to the drawing board, and I'm excited for the possibilities that are out there. But it's also, I'm excited to be able to connect more with the running community, and, you know, hopefully pandemic restrictions easing. It'll be nice to be able to get out to races and support other people and to see everybody in the running community. It's such a great community of great people. And I'm really excited to get out and also cheer at some of these races and see some of my friends on some social runs.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's I was just on a group run yesterday, and yeah, it was nice to kind of feel that normalcy again. And seems like everybody's gotten COVID now that I know, including myself. I was hiding from it, and it got me. So,
yeah, I know how you feel after I was avoiding it for two years, and then of course 2 weeks before Boston, I was still testing positive. So sometimes it gets you at the worst times. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I still got to get out to Toronto so we can have a run together too. So.
For sure.
Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. What has running taught you, Nick?
It's taught me a lot. I mean, it's meant so much to me in different seasons of my life. When I was running track, I was, you know, as I said, you know, trying to compare myself to others. And now it's really that, you know, finding that inner peace. It's, you know, it's taught me that, you know, if you continue to work hard at something and be persistent, that, you know, you can accomplish great things if you really put your mind to it. And what's great for me and what's great for other people is totally relative. But, you know, it taught me so much. It's hard to put into words how much I've gained from the sport itself, the act of running, being out there in nature, and also, you know, just try to be better every day. It's taught me so much. It means the world to me, and it's really hard to put into words, to be honest.
Do you feel like it's trickled into other aspects of your life as well? I know it has for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much you can learn in running. It's a great metaphor for life, and I think that there's a lot that's translated to my regular life, where when things are a little bit tough, that I just keep pushing forward.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And are you ready for the famous rundown question? You know, you probably know what it is already.
I think we've covered a couple of them, but hit me with it. Let's go.
The finale is always, what does running mean to you?
Running means the world to me. It's hard to really put into words. It changes on the day. It changes based on the seasons of my life. But really, it's something that I can always count on being there, no matter how I feel. It's when I'm able to get out the door, I come back, I'm always feeling better about whatever I've gone through in that day. And, you know, being able to connect with so many amazing people like yourself through the running community has really made me a better person, made me learn more about myself and, you know, how I can be a better person and a better runner. And so, you know, just being able to, you know, I've explored the world, I've been able to explore trails in different cities. It's allowed me to connect to myself, like through my Boston Marathon run, I was able to connect with my dad. And it's allowed me to do so much. I couldn't be more grateful for the sport and for the community that surrounds it.
That's awesome, Nick. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. It's a fun question to ask because it, you know, connects to everybody differently. And at the same time, it connects the same way for a lot of us too. So it's always nice to ask that and to hear everybody's answer. Where's your favorite place to run in, like where you're from?
In Toronto, it's High Park, and I was definitely putting in a lot of hill work around there, leading up to Boston. So I really became, I felt like that was my home for the last few months, was running around High Park. And then, Toronto, the lakeshore is always great. It's always fun to run by and see a lot of familiar faces there. And when I travel, though, I've got to say I love being out in Vancouver and being on the seawall and running around Stanley Park, too. There's not really much that can compare to that. But when I'm here home in Toronto, High Park is probably my favorite spot to run.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to get there and check it out. Definitely overdue for some Toronto running and a visit to Toronto. My grandma's been waiting for a few years now, so gotta get out there.
Yeah, you come here and I'll show you. We can go for a run through High Park and then grab a beer, and I'll come out to Montreal and get some of those famous bagels that I love so much, and we can go for a run after that.
We'll do a home and home for sure. That'd be great. Well, Nick, thanks so much, man, for coming on. It's been really fun to watch your progress in the sport and to track you in Boston, and I'm so happy you made it there and had a great experience, and hopefully we can toe the line together again one day.
I'd love that. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast. As I said, I'm a big fan, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by the annual Wings for Life World Run, taking place on Sunday, May 8th. Run and walk for those who can. The format is simple. Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com to sign up to race. Download the app on your mobile device, and on May 8th, when the race begins, run as far as you can until the virtual catcher car passes you by. 100% of the race fee is donated to spinal cord research. By registering, you're making a donation to support and help find a cure for millions around the world affected by spinal cord injuries. I've been a part of this race for the past 4 years, and it's by far one of the most unique formats. Here's how it works for listeners in Canada. On Sunday, May 8th at 7 a.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. Pacific, the race begins. You set your own course and distance, and then you go. 30 minutes after the start of the race, a virtual finish line starts on course, slowly picking up pace to try and catch you. The further and faster you run, the longer it takes to catch up to you. Whether you plan to run 5K, 42, or even pushing a stroller, you'll be competing against your friends and other runners across the world for a great cause.
Visit wingsforlifeworldrun.com or download the Wings for Life World Run app in the App Store or Google Play. Then sign up and register for Team Ben Squad. Set your target distance and be sure to turn on your GPS to track your race. When the finish line catches you, your race is over and it's time for brunch and to cheer on your friends. So grab a friend to race with you, plug the date in your calendar, and set your alarm. Good luck with your training and see you on May 8th. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.